Hello, hello! This is Fernando Fiore, El Presidente, and you are listening to the Mouths of the South podcast on DirtySouthTucker.com. Yole!
This is the Mouths of the South podcast.
Matt Doyle joining us now on the Mouths of the South podcast.
And Alexi Lalas joins us right now,
bringing you the best coverage of Atlanta United FC.
Paul Tenorio joining us now. Kristen Hennage on the Mouths of the South podcast.
The president of Atlanta United FC, Darren Eels.
Happy to have Doug Robertson on the Mouths of the South podcast, AJC writer for Atlanta United. The biggest names and exclusive interviews on the Mouths of the South podcast.
They'll do it again soon.
My pleasure.
Thanks, guys. Really appreciate you having me on.
Let's go.
What's up, Atlanta? Welcome back to a special edition of the Mouths of the South podcast right here on DirtySouthSoccer.com. Sam Franco here with you. And like I said, it's special. We've got a special guest, a man who has joined us before here on the Mouths of the South. We're going to be talking to Alexi Lalas. Very, very excited about this one because he will be with the Fox crew on Sunday night over at Bobby Dodd Stadium for Atlanta United's first ever game in MLS against the New York Red Bulls. And we are very much looking forward to Sunday and very much looking forward to bringing you this interview right here on the Mouths of the South podcast. Happy to be joined now once again by Alexi Lalas. And Alexi, before we dive into the match-specific preview here as the first game of Atlanta United's MLS time will be against the New York Red Bulls coming up here on Sunday, I wanted to ask you, because you were there on April 16th of 2014 when this dream was born, and it's obviously come a long way since then. Atlanta United have made a lot of good moves, and some would probably say Atlanta United have made some moves that might be questionable to them. What's just been your overall impression on the team and what they've done from that day in Atlanta back in 2014 until now?
Well, I'm not sure that I could have anticipated the the direction and the template that Atlanta laid out that day when I was there, and so fortunate and privileged to be around all of you guys as that announcement came. Having said that, and this is once again now from the outside, what Atlanta has done in terms of the expectations is basically put themselves front and center and saying, we are here and we will not be ignored. In the money that they've spent, the way in which they've gone out assembling this team and this organization, they have been big, they have been bold, they have been arrogant, and I look at arrogance as a positive, so I'm not saying that as a negative in any way, and certainly in this inevitable compare and contrast with the other team that's coming into MLS Minnesota, it is very, very different, this approach, and I am fascinated by it. I cannot wait to see how it plays out. I don't know if it's going to be successful, but ultimately, as I said, you have my attention, and I think you have the attention of a lot of people around the country and around North America who are excited to see what this Atlanta team is all about. Whether it's the head coach, whether it's the incredible influx of talent that they have gone out and gotten and paid for, or whether it's just the general reaction of Atlanta to this team and to this sport.
And you've been a general manager in this league, so you know a lot of the ins and outs and kind of how it works. And it's, for the average American sports fan, a league that definitely has intricacies that it's not used to in terms of allocation money and designated players and things like that. And you mentioned this a second ago, and the way that Atlanta United has gone about this and the way they've spent money. How impressed have you been with just the way that they've negotiated a league that isn't necessarily the easiest to bring in the talent that they have?
Well, I mean, first and foremost, you need somebody that when he picks up the phone or when you mention his name, people take notice. And you got that immediately in terms of the coach. He obviously has a pedigree. He doesn't have any MLS experience, and there's not a great history of success when it comes to that. But I think what they once they recognized was that they wanted to get a team that is international. And, man, I'm looking at your starting 11, potential starting 11 here for this Sunday. And conceivably, your entire front six could be international players. And then of the back four, depending on who plays, another two of them there. So basically two or three actual domestic players in that 11. And that is interesting. And that is something that we don't see a tremendous amount. And I can't wait to see how that plays out. And don't think for a second that the fact that you had Tata as a coach didn't play in to the likes of Almiron and all the other DPs and young DPs that they signed deciding to come to Atlanta and to come to MLS.
And one of the things, too, in terms of working around maybe the way MLS is structured is the fact that two of the players that we thought would be international players in Kenwyn Jones from Trinidad and Chris McCann from Ireland, both of those guys end up getting green cards, so they are not going to take up international slots.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the intricacies, as you mentioned. It is a very confusing league when it comes to the rules and regulations, but it's also very flexible and by design. But you need people out there, and whether it's Carlos or Darren or people that understand how to work the system, you need, and that's not a bad thing. The best teams in MLS understand how to use it to their advantage and have a real understanding of all the ins and outs. And you need that, and especially you need it when it's a brand new team. Now, you are given plenty of money to go out there and do the things that you want to do, but you got to have people that are smart. And at least on the surface here, the way that they've gone about it, it looks like they've been smart. But we all know that on Sunday, that referee's going to blow the whistle, and you're coming up against a very good team in the New York Red Bulls, which aren't going to care about the names. They're not going to care about the fact that you're a new team. They're not going to care about the coaches or the money or anything else. They're going to care about getting 3 points and spoiling the day for Atlanta.
And let's dive right into that matchup against the New York Red Bulls. First and foremost, these are both two teams that are going to want to hit you with that high press, play really attacking style of soccer. So when those two kind of things go head-to-head like that, what ends up being the thing that ultimately determines a winner in those type of scenarios?
Well, I mean, ultimately, then it's the team that is best able to recognize and then take advantage of that break, because they like to high press. Both teams like to high press, and if the high press works, then you win balls in advantageous areas, and you got to have the skill and the ability and the ruthlessness in those moments to make teams pay. The other part of it is if a team high presses and it doesn't work, and that team breaks high press, who has the best and who has the advantage in terms of the players that are going to be then in great vast amounts of space in order to utilize that? Who can do that? So this is going to be it could be a free for all back and forth, lots of goals, lots of opportunities in space, at least on the surface and on paper. That's the way that shapes up. We know that on paper it never ultimately plays out like that, but I would love to see just a back-and-forth type of game where both teams are having opportunities. Both teams are high-pressing. Sometimes the high-press works. Sometimes they break the press, and then they have all sorts of space to play into. Those are fun games. They're not so much fun when you're the coach of the team, but who cares? You know, we want entertainment, and we want excitement on Sunday.
What did you think of the Red Bulls trading Dax McCarty to Chicago? Because he's been a very important player for them over the years, and they only traded it for allocation money. And so that's something that's going to definitely disrupt the flow and the style of this team right off the bat.
Yeah, I mean, look, he was a leader. He was the captain. I think he was very, very important in terms of how this team played. And I think it... For me, it was interesting because it's in the context of also a major off-season change where Ali Curtis, the technical director and one of the architects of this Red Bull system and team, was also someone who departed. And how much or little the Dax McCarty decision played into all that. So there's all sorts of intrigue and drama going on with the Red Bulls, but ultimately this is a team that's very good. This is a team that understands how to play. This is a team with individual players, whether it's a Bradley Wright Phillips or a Sasha Kljestan, that are well-known throughout this league as stars in this league. But then you have young players, Sean Davis, these types of players that are coming in that are either coming from the academy or just young, that they think are going to pick up that slack and be players that are going to be around for the next 10 years. So there are questions, I think, on both sides for this game. You also have the Red Bulls that are coming cross-country, having played on Thursday. They're going to play the Thursday night game in Vancouver in CONCACAF Champions League. So there's going to be a little bit of fatigue that could play to the advantage of Atlanta. So a lot of different things working for this game on Sunday.
It's funny you mentioned that West Coast trip for the New York Red Bulls, because Jesse Marsh was on Extra Time Radio the other day, and he was kind of saying how he had requested to MLS, or they had hoped that MLS would give them a game on the West Coast to start the season. Instead, they got to fly all the way across country to Atlanta. And, you know, some Atlanta fans are obviously taking that as him already having a built-in excuse if they don't perform well. But at the same time, it definitely is something to pay attention to.
Well, I mean, I think that the Atlanta United fans will very, very quickly come to the realization and the understanding that Jesse Marsh complains about everything. I love Jesse, and he's a wonderful coach and a really smart guy, and he's very, very strategic and smart about the way that he complains about everything, and squeaky wheel and all that kind of stuff. So, and the other thing that Atlanta fans will very quickly come to know is that this is a league with very fine margins, and the advantage that you have and the small, slim advantages that you can take wherever they come, you have to be able to take them because of this manufactured parity, because of the rules and regulations. What separates teams from being good and bad in terms of the way they perceive them is oftentimes a couple points or very, very little in terms of that comparison. And so where the advantages are, you've got to take advantage of them, and recognizing where the disadvantages are, sometimes even in a public way, is advantageous.
Now, one player for the New York Red Bulls, and I want to get back to guys that you mentioned earlier in Shasta Kleshin and Bradley Wright Phillips in a minute, but Gonzalo Varon is a guy who cost him $2.2 million from San Lorenzo, and he's a guy that, quite frankly, a lot of Red Bulls fans would say has underperformed for that money in his time as a member of the team. Yeah. What have your thoughts been on that?
Well, it's interesting because you mentioned that interview with Jesse. I was listening to it too, and it was, I get it. He's got to protect the decision that at this point, and it's not over, but at this point has to be at least look at as an initial bust, because when you are a designated player, yes, there are higher expectations. When you are getting paid all of that money, and when you come in with that designation, people are going to expect more. And when you can't even start and you're not having an impact week in and week out, that's a problem. And so I recognize and respect the fact that Jesse's going to protect that decision, even though now it's looking like it hasn't been the greatest decision. That's once again putting stuff out public and him saying, well, he's part of the team and this is a long-term project. I get it. And from the other side, look, there are designated players on Atlanta, and they are young. They paid money for them. They are coming with a pedigree, and they are also coming with the added, I don't know if it's a burden, but the hope that they are going to appreciate in value at Atlanta. And so from an Atlanta perspective, you should expect more out of your designated players, and you should expect that they are consistently bringing it week in and week out. Now, it doesn't mean that every single choice that a team makes comes out smelling roses. You're going to have duds. It's just going to happen. But they are much more detrimental when it happens in MLS, because you can't afford to have these types of problems when you make decisions, because it's not a situation where you have unlimited amount of fees and unlimited amount of space to do these decisions that, if they work out, oh, we'll move them on. You can't do that in MLS.
All right, back to two of the danger men for the New York Red Bulls, Sasha Kleshin and Bradley Wright Phillips. Obviously two completely different style of players, but Kleshin does a great job of moving that ball around in the midfield and distributing forward to guys like Bradley Wright Phillips. So is Atlanta United's kind of biggest chore on Sunday against the Red Bulls to disrupt Kleshin?
Yeah, I mean, you got to know where he is, because he's really good in establishing a flow and a rhythm for his team, and he can hit that killer ball when need be and score some goals here or there. It'll be interesting for me, because we've seen Red Bulls in the past, and where their success has come is playing one up top, and they've moved to a more of a, even at times look like a 4-2-2-2 in this preseason, and we're going to see if that continues. So Bradley Wright Phillips might not be as alone as he has been in the past, and I'll be interested to see how that plays out from a Red Bull perspective, who's up there with them. They've done it to try to congest the middle of the field and make it more difficult for teams to play through them, and I get that. But in doing so, they may have put themselves in a situation where they lack width, and can Atlanta exploit that? I don't know. But certainly there are individuals on Rebels that you're going to have to figure out a way to shut down. And those two that you mentioned, undeniably, they are people that you got to worry about on a consistent basis.
With some of the concessions that the league has made towards NYCFC and letting them come in and play in Yankee Stadium and the whole thing that went down with David Villa and everything, should the Red Bulls kind of feel like a disrespected club?
Look, at the time when NYCFC came in, they paid $100 million. And so that bought them a lot of leeway. And look, they have got to get a stadium situation sorted out for the New York Red Bulls for NYCFC, because Yankee Stadium is just not going to do it. And they understand that. I'm not telling them anything that they don't know. As far as the Red Bulls, keep in mind that over the last couple of years, and this is why I mentioned Ali Curtis and Jesse Marsh, they have gone out of their way to completely change the way that they think about their team. It's no longer that team of big stars and being big and bold in the New York metropolitan market. They went smaller. They went more homegrown. They didn't go after the big stars that they've gone in the past. And while it's not as sexy and maybe not as interesting in that New York market, it has been very, very successful. And I think that is the template they are going to use going forward. But as that template, it's completely different than what NYCFC is doing. And so it's almost, while they're both in the same market, they are totally different in their philosophies on how to put together a team right now. And so it's almost as if, yes, they do compete, and yes, there's a rivalry, but it's so opposing in terms of the way that they think about how to put their team together right now, that it's almost as if they're not even competing. So I don't think that the Red Bulls are feeling slighted, because they made their decision to go a completely different way in terms of their business on and off the field.
Getting back to Atlanta United, and one point of, contention for this team within the fan base is the goalkeeper position, and obviously it seems like it's going to be Alec Khan for the foreseeable future until Brad Guzan comes over from Middlesbrough in the early summer. What's your kind of thoughts on the goalkeeper position in general, and should you go in a league like MLS, should you go after maybe pay bigger money for a keeper, or can you get by with a guy like Alec Khan, who in his time, you know, filling in at Sporting Kansas City, you know, had his ups and downs?
Yeah, look, I think that if you have an opportunity to sign someone like Brad Guzan, then you do it, and I think it was the right thing to do. Can you get away in MLS with not spending your money and having your focus be a goalkeeper? Sure, and that's good. But I think not just because he's a good goalkeeper, but also because what Atlanta was doing, it's the start, it's a bigger name. I think that was the right thing to do. And it's nothing, it doesn't mean that Alec can't come in and be very, very good. And what Bob is to make it as difficult as possible and put the most possible pressure he can on Brad when he comes in the middle of the season. And if I was Alec, I would be licking my chops for this opportunity, because if he does well and consistently does well, and we know that Atlanta's going to be under some pressure, so he's going to get plenty of shots. And if he is consistently being the guy that saves them and earns them points here or there, that's going to put incredible amount of pressure on Brad. In the same way that when Tim Howard came in the middle of last season, he came in knowing that he had to come in and be very, very good, because they were already doing very, very well. You don't want to be the cause of problems. And I think Alex's job is to make sure that when Brad Guzan comes in, that he's thinking, man, I do not want to mess this up, because it's already gone so well.
We've asked you this before when we've had you on, in terms of the expectation for Atlanta, but that was before this team had kind of been fully assembled and got the coach and everything all kind of put together. Is not making the playoffs for this team this season, should that be considered a failure?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we draw the line between success and failure in a league like MLS, where over half the teams make the playoffs, at that playoff line. And even for a team in its first year, look, it's not as if it's the end of the world if you don't make the playoffs and you're going to fire the coach and change everything. No. But I draw that line between success and failure at that playoff line. Now, when it comes to the way that Atlanta has positioned themselves, it just reinforces that line for me. with the amount of money that they spent, with the talent that they have amassed, and with the expectation that they have created for what this team is going to be, whether it's, as I said, on the field or off the field, the way that community has embraced this team, at least on the surface, and we'll see what happens this weekend in terms of the numbers, you should expect that your team is vying for a playoff position. And so I would say for them, yes, success is making the playoffs. Failure is not making the playoffs.
And you mentioned the numbers and the fan support and the swelling of fan support. I mean, this team has sold over 30,000 season tickets. They broke the expansion mark for season tickets sold. They've sold over 50,000 tickets for this opening game. And, you know, some of the people in the media that cover soccer from a national perspective, a guy you know really well, Taylor Twellman, didn't seem to think that Atlanta would be a good market. Some of these other guys have said Atlanta, you know, they're not a great sports town. But I think that the level to which they've sold tickets and the level to which the fans seem to have really embraced this team before they've even played an official MLS game has surprised a lot of people.
Yeah, I mean, but I think it is valid, and I think it's fair given the history of sports in Atlanta to have some trepidation. Now, that history isn't necessarily based on an affiliation with soccer. And so I think that's where, for me, the difference is. This isn't necessarily Atlanta sports fans accepting or rejecting a team. This is Atlanta soccer fans accepting or rejecting a team. And look, you're on the ground and you know a whole lot better than I do, but at least from the outside, I think that's where the difference comes, and that's where the success will come from. So in the past, while Atlanta fans at least have gotten the reputation as being fair weather, these are soccer fans. And you know as well as I do that there is a soccer community there, and a big one, and maybe one that's just been underground and dying for this moment, that will now become Atlanta sports fans, but first and foremost, they're Atlanta soccer fans, and I think that they will appreciate and embrace this team in a different way, maybe, than just your traditional American Atlanta sports fan, and I think that's what will be interesting and novel and unique when it comes to this team. And I think that's where that power and that passion is coming from, or at least where it's centered.
Hey, believe me, it wasn't Atlanta's fault that the U.S. came in and lost that game to Jamaica in the Gold Cup. You know, I think a lot of Atlanta fans got a bad rap for that one, and they were like, we're never going back to Atlanta again. But, you know, Atlanta obviously has responded here with the ticket sales and the season ticket sales. One thing about this game that's obviously going to be difficult is predicting it, just because you've never seen Atlanta United play in an MLS game. But I will say that it seems like there's a lot of things working against the Red Bulls. You mentioned earlier the trip across country that they're going to have to make from playing in the CONCACAF Champions League. Also, just the ground swelling of it being Atlanta's first game. Should Atlanta be favored in this one?
Well, that's an interesting question. I think that much more so than, let's say, Minnesota, the perception of this team and the reality of what this team is in terms of quality, fueled by what we just talked about, an opening game, the first time ever, all of that adrenaline and energy and passion and goodwill, that has incredible value. And I think that can propel a team forward to play even better than they actually are. Now, it can't do it for a season, but it can do it in a one-off first game. I think the first goal is crucial, because if New York finds a way to score that first goal and pop that bubble, that could be real problematic, I think. But if they come out on fire and in the first 15 minutes Atlanta is getting opportunities, and if they happen to score a goal, I mean, that place is going to go berserk. All of those things that people thought and people wrote on paper will now turn into reality, at least for that 90 minutes, and I think that everybody will go home happy with a wonderful performance and a win. If they come out flat, and if they come out and say, wow, this doesn't live up to what we saw on paper or the expectations that we have, then it could be a long day for Atlanta.
Alexi Lalas, thank you so much for joining us. You've been great to us. Obviously, even calling into our post-game show after the Chattanooga game. So we really appreciate that, and we look forward to seeing you and the Fox crew over at Bobby Dodd Stadium in Atlanta on Sunday.
Wait, we cannot wait. We are so excited about the arrival of Atlanta, and not just the arrival of the team, but the arrival of a brand new city and culture and community that is embracing not just MLS, but the game and the different way in which they embrace it. Because we travel all over with our Fox team to all these different communities and cities that have MLS teams, and each one has its own unique flavor, and we cannot wait to see what the flavor is going to be in Atlanta for this new Atlanta United team.
Alexi Lalas, you're the man. Thank you so much, and we'll look forward to doing this again sometime soon. Once again, many thanks to Alexi Lalas. He's really been great to us. He was our first huge, big, high-profile guest here on the Mouths of the South, and he even called in to the post-game show of the Chattanooga game when Eric was doing that, so that was really cool as well. But he seems to be on board with Atlanta United in terms of their ability to compete this season and really push for a playoff spot. So coming up on Sunday, it's really hard to believe, as we mentioned there, he was there, I was there on April 16th, 2014, when this dream was born. And now it's coming to life. Sunday night, New York Red Bulls, 7:30 at Bobby Dodd Stadium. Obviously not the stadium we hoped it would be in to start off the bat, but at the same time, Atlanta, again, did a phenomenal job of really getting all this done, especially when the stadium delays were happening with the Mercedes-Benz Stadium. We'll still look forward to that opener in Mercedes-Benz Stadium coming up in July, but we are definitely looking forward to this one coming up against the Red Bulls on Sunday night. Thank you for listening to the Mouths of the South podcast right here on DirtySouthSoccer.com. Follow along on Twitter at MOTS Podcast. You can also follow Dirty South Soccer on Twitter at Dirty South Sock. Send us an email, motspodcast@gmail.com. And the hosts individually on Twitter, I'm at Sam J. Franco. Eric is at Eric G. Quintana. And Jason is at Jason is a Smith. We'll have some pre- and post-game stuff coming up for you on Sunday when Atlanta takes on the New York Red Bulls. But for now, this has been another episode of the Mouths of the South podcast. Thanks again to Alexi Lalas, and thanks to you, Atlanta, for always listening to us. And just get ready for Sunday, folks. It's going to be a wild one.